Welcome to a Frugal Athlete podcast, where we interview athletes, both current and former, on the prudent financial practices and smart career decisions they are making. In these episodes, we dive into what it means to be a frugal athlete. You might think that frugal just means being cheap, but as you will soon learn, being frugal is more complex than that. I'm your host, Amobi Okugo. In this episode, we got
someone I consider a great mentor, great connector, person you have to go to, all things investments, all things esports, Rebecca Longaway. How you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
No, I appreciate it. It's been a long time coming, but you know, we had to make it happen. You have a lot of insight that I'd love for the audience to learn. But before we get into that, can you please share with us, you know, your backstory, your journey to where you are today now?
Yeah, sure. So I have been working in marketing in some facet since the summer after eighth grade. My mom worked at a marketing firm in the warehouse, nothing fancy. She wasn't a fancy marketer. I came from a very kind of a low income kind of a situation household. So my mom worked in a warehouse at a marketing firm. I started working there the summer after eighth grade. I worked there every single summer in the warehouse for from eighth grade to my junior year. And then my senior year, right before my senior year and the summer after my senior year of high school, I worked in their marketing department as a summer intern. So I've really been working in some facet of marketing as long as I can really remember. Started my career quite young as well, full-time in advertising at a marketing agency that was working with FedEx. So it was I started, you know, really entry level when I was 19 years old as a production coordinator for FedEx's sponsorship of the NFL and kart racing, which was a loyalty program. You know, ever since then, even when I got into digital marketing agencies, I really focused on sports and entertainment clients. One of them over the years was the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the NBA as a whole and Orlando Magic. And I was able to get a job in-house over time with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And from there worked directly with athletes, entertainers. I produced a show with our former governor, Jesse Ventura. And then I really started advising on sports tech investments. And that's what led me into esports. Stadia Ventures, we were getting esports tech companies applying for funding and mentorship. And for the past, you know, 3.5 years, I've been talking to a lot of esports startups, whether they're community startups or teams or tech platforms. It's just been something that has come really natural to me and puts kind of a fire in my belly. So it's been a really long career. I feel really blessed every day to be able to have had the experiences that I've had thus far, and I'm just getting started.
Shout out to our partner, Obsidian by Magma Capital Funds, for making this podcast possible. They are a quantitative hedge fund built exclusively for current and former professional athletes. Obsidian works hard to change the investing game for athletes by utilizing machine learning and AI that adapts to the ever-changing financial market. They strive to perform well in all environments, just like you. Thanks again, and shout out to our partner, Obsidian, by Magma Capital Funds.
No, and exactly right. You're just getting started. And what's great about your career, especially when it comes to esports, you know, I feel like you're one of the first people to really dive into it and really, you know, take a hands-on approach. So for the folks that really don't know, I mean, I always come to you with questions. Esports, gaming, that whole arena, can you give us like a 101 basic a version of what it all entails?
Yeah. So the gaming industry as a whole is, it's huge. It's $189 billion industry. And that is, you know, that's billions with a capital B. So it's a huge industry. Esports. And when I say gaming, PC gaming, like computer games, there's the console games that we all know very well from Atari growing into the Xbox and PlayStation. And then there's also mobile gaming. So the mobile gaming dollars are included in that. And that is from developing and publishing games to retail sales to to the distribution and the apps and the in-app purchases that are included in that. So it is an ecosystem. So I focus in a few different areas within that gaming industry. The investment side, outlier investments coming in and wanting to invest in some of those companies and initiatives, including creating esports teams. So esports is just a small sliver of that pie. When you look at the entire piece of that gaming industry, esports is $1 billion. So, you know, that when you think about it, like as a pie chart, it just looks like this tiny sliver, but $1 billion that is growing year over year is still something that you cannot ignore. Esports is the act of competing for dollars playing video games. That's basically what esports is. And there's a number of games, you know, 30 or more games that can be esports that you can play against one another. The reason why this has been one of the buzzwords, right? Like the blockchains, the NFTs, the growth of investment in marijuana and esports are all kind of the coined things that people have been talking about for the past couple of years, has been really derived from a lot of leagues and formalized franchises that have now been launched out of these very long, long-standing, reputable game developers like Riot Games and Activision Blizzard, creating leagues that are being purchased by companies like Jerry Jones, who owns the Cowboys. We have the Wilfs here in our backyard who own the Vikings. You know, they're buying into these franchises. And the dollars to buy into like an Overwatch or a Call of Duty team are in the tens of millions of dollars to have your own franchise team. That's really what got a lot of people's attention. You know, if Mark Cuban is investing in esports, if Gary Vaynerchuk is buying into an esports property or an esports team, it's time to pay attention, because what we've seen from their track record is they're the disruptors and they're the innovators. And usually the predictions that they have of where the market is going and where the next generation of consumers are wanting to spend their time and energy and ultimately their dollars, they've been pretty good at predicting kind of where that market's going. So I've always worked in, I've always been a risk taker. You know, I had no choice being a young person in the situation that I came from. I had to be a risk taker. I had to take bold risks. And so, you know, naturally coming into something like esports for me made sense. And based on my experience in both sales and marketing, I've really been able to kind of carve out a niche, you know, coupled with just like a passion for it. I don't think anybody gets into this space without a passion for it. But there's just continual growth within our industry of esports and expansion, not only in the live events, but now with COVID really producing a large amount of digital events as well.
Oh, that's amazing. And real quick, do you have like a favorite game that you either play or support, you know, in the esports arena?
Yeah, you know, I have to be completely honest. I'm not a gamer. I mean, I grew up playing video games. I literally would like fake being sick when we had a Nintendo play Mario Brothers and try to get like as good as my brother, like every other kid in our neighborhood, wanting to get as good as my brother. But, you know, I worked in the NBA for many years. I worked for the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx, and I also didn't play basketball. So, It's not something that I currently do, but my favorite video games, I would say growing up, Tetris.
Okay.
I was really into Tetris. My favorite arcade game would probably be Joust. It's an old Atari game where like ostriches are playing Joust and you have to collect their eggs. It's weird, but it's super cool. It's really fun. In college, I just was at the University of Minnesota, and I lived kind of in a house with a bunch of dudes, and we played Oddworld on Xbox. I'm not familiar. I don't know if anybody's played Oddworld. It's been around for a while, but it's kind of like it's just a different little game. But Yeah, I'm not personally a gamer. I've always been fascinated with fandom and the idea of people who are hyper passionate about certain things and what gets them, you know, really into being a fan of certain things. So that's kind of where my marketing lens stems from. But yeah, for me personally, what drives me, when I worked at the Wolves and even when they were a client of mine, it was the business of basketball that I was really passionate about. The business of esports is something that just really drives me every day.
No, that's amazing. And I really appreciate you touching on that because I'm not much of a gamer myself, but you've always made it adamant, you know, that there's so many ways to get into the esports arena, specifically for athletes. Can you talk about that? I mean, you know, you have your relationships with Minnesota. I know Justin Jefferson, I believe, just announced like he has like the first NFL player to be on Fortnite. So there's ways to get involved in esports without actually playing. So can you talk about that from your perspective?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of opportunities. I worked on a really cool live event a few years ago before COVID hit. We would have done them last year. And that event, you know, was with Elevar Gaming and Jason Tricano. He was really the person who ideated creating these community events. And he had planned and negotiated and hosted it at the largest casino in the Midwest, which is here in Minnesota, called Mystic Lake Casino. And I just helped on bringing brand partners in and sponsors in. So I had a very minimal role. But it was interesting because one of the ideas that he had, which I think was just absolutely brilliant, was to bring in pro athletes and do kind of like a pros versus Joes on the main stage throughout 3 days of the event, picking different esports games, which were, you know, the FIFA game and NBA 2K, as well as Madden, and then invite pro athletes to come and be the pros playing against regular people who just were selected to come up and play against them on the big screen. I mean, it's a conference room at a casino, so it's not like a big screen, but it was a really cool activation. It was a really great way for, these athletes to come in a really safe way. And Anthony Harris was there at the time he was with the Vikings. I think he's now signed with another team, but you know, being able to create events that are scalable. When we did our Call of Duty launch event a little over a year ago, Minnesota was the host city, and we had entertainers and athletes that were integrated within that event, including, you know, Michael B. Jordan, huge star, Karl Anthony Towns, literally one of the biggest names in the NBA, coming and being a part of just that singular event. But then you've got athletes that are very much committed to being streamers and pivoting. You know, Amon Green is a phenomenal example. He played for the Packers. And he's really been able to kind of turn a new leaf in his career. And he's represented, he has an agent. He's with the team at Ford Models Esports. And his agent is getting him, you know, brand deals and partnership deals, as well as having conversations with multiple teams and multiple orgs to really infuse his likeness and his brand into existing entities, and then really brainstorming new ideas, which that's really the key is the way that I talk to athletes about esports is very similar to the way I talked about social media to athletes 10 years ago. It's so similar. You know, 10 years ago, when I would talk to players that I was advising on their personal brands, I was really trying to encourage them to be thoughtful and intentional about social media and how they use social media and the framework in which they attack social media and kind of some guidelines around ways that they can protect themselves from harming their personal brands on social. And it sounds like so like of course, to us 10 years later, but I will tell you, I got a ton of pushback. They didn't think it was worth their time. They didn't want to build a brand there. And they felt like if they were going to invest time, someone should pay them every single time that they posted, because in their little isolated world, every single time they went to an event or signed a t-shirt or a basketball or a football, somebody was giving them a check to do that. Everything they did was extremely transactional, 5 minutes in front of your face. Like, and it's not their fault. That is the conveyor belt of pro sports that has been created to control athletes, right? The system is very much created over time in a way that controls the athlete, right? I mean, sometimes players don't get their practice schedule till the day before. And that can harm their ability to really expand opportunities. When they don't know when they need to be at practice the next day, they can't commit to do much else. They got to just wait and pay, right? So it's a system of control, because this is the way that these organizations are making money, right? So what they've been doing is, it's almost like we have a puppy right now. It's almost like training a puppy. Do the thing. Here's your treat. Do the thing. Here's your treat. That's how we treat athletes. It's really damaging to them, because it pulls them away from having control. As soon as these athletes started understanding the power of their personal brands 10 years ago, and they started being intentional about creating a social media presence and allowing the external world into their life in controlled ways, in intentional ways and deliberate ways, they took that power on. Now you're seeing athletes understand the power of their likeness and do the actions repeatedly, and then be selective about the transaction. So they're controlling their own content. They're allowing what they want to be seen about themselves and their life and their brand to be orchestrated and then brought out forth into the world. And then they can vet out and decide what brands meet their values, what brands are resonate with them. And then they're able to say, you know, this is what it's going to take for us to partner. And they kind of can own that now. That's exciting. When we're getting into this video game space, this digital space, right? So it's really more than playing video games. It is really, truly, video games is the nucleus that connects people, but there's so many different layers within that, with Twitch, Reddit, Discord channels, the social aspects, but the video games themselves are really that connective tissue. When an athlete, a pro athlete or a retired athlete, can say, I'm going to invest X amount of time a day and create a schedule to stream or to co-stream or to make myself available to work with pro teams or other streamers or other content creators, and I'm going to make myself available during these times. What they do is they now build their own brand, their own following. They create their own community. They don't have to be governed to anybody else. They're creating that community. They're owning that community. And when you own community, you own the access to your audience. You now own your fans. The team doesn't own your fans. You own your fans. Yeah. They're your fans. And you have collected them underneath this esports umbrella or this gaming umbrella, the Twitch umbrella or Facebook gaming or whatever platform you choose. Now, when you do it consistently without asking for anything in return, and you do it well, right? You build that cadence out, then you can monetize that. That's when now you own the power to either bring on an agent, which I always suggest people bring on somebody who is well-versed in negotiating and understands the value, right? Or getting signed underneath one of these umbrellas, like a 100 Thieves or Version 1 or FaZe Clan, to be able to then leverage and bring in additional revenue. But with all things, putting yourself out there comes with risk. We've seen over the past 10 years, athletes tweet things, you know, I mean, a famous one is, you know, Kevin Durant's burner account where, I mean, he's just skewered on, and most recently in esports with Myers Leonard using a racial slur or, you know, an anti-Semitic slur that has gotten him, you know, completely cut out of even the mainstream and losing contracts in the NBA, right? So you have to understand that this is a space that's real time. So take your media training that you got when you're a pro athlete and you better apply it. This is kind of the Wild West, but that doesn't mean that now you're a cowboy, right? Yeah. It might be the Wild West, but you are still a professional. So you have to kind of abide by those types of teachings that you have been fortunate to be educated on for so many years.
Hey, what's up? I'm Amobi Okugo, AKA a frugal athlete. So check this out. We came out with an all new, extensive, brand new course. Our course, Rookie Mistakes, is a course that helps young athletes and individuals avoid the common mistakes when starting your career. I provide real-life examples, lessons, insights, all that and more to teach you how to identify the rookie mistakes before you make them. And trust me, I've made a lot. It's all about giving yourself the best foundation and head start to build financial and career stability. For more information or to get the course, check out the link in bio.
No, I really appreciate you saying that point about, you know, your life. You know, obviously you have time to think before you tweet. And even then, you know, athletes make mistakes, but when you're in a competitive playing games, you know, chatting, talking mess, you have to watch what you say because you are being watched, you are being recorded, you are being scrutinized. With that being said, obviously you're well-versed in the space. Facebook streaming, YouTube gaming, Twitch, is there like a particular platform that you'd recommend someone to start with now, or is it just about consistency?
You know, I would say that Twitch is the largest out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's probably has the most collective content for somebody who's just getting started. There's mm-hmm. so many guides that you can even Google of how to get started being a streamer on Twitch. It's really easy to navigate that space. And it also comes with a very large existing community. Twitch is the largest platform. It has the most followers. It's going to give you the best advantage on capitalizing a percentage of those followers.
Okay. And I know you mentioned, you know, getting an agent that's well-versed in negotiating and persuasion and different things like that. But from an athlete standpoint, say for me, you know, I've always wanted to, I'm not really a gamer, but I like playing chess. And I know chess is considered esports. So I'm thinking I wanted to create like a series called Say It With Your Chess. And I play chess once a week. But I would need some followers to, you know, hopefully build like merchandise or brand deals. What's that process like in terms of, you know, getting a brand deal in the esports space?
Well, you need to build it. You know, this is like the field of dreams. If you build it, they will come, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, before you give the house away, what you need to do is create your channel. And it could even be, you know, finding someone who is on the content team at one of the smaller esports clubs and hiring them as a freelancer, just part-time to help you get started, right? Like that's a real legitimate thing that if your listeners are interested in getting started, you know, start connecting with some of these folks that are right out of college and that are young, that are working for these teams and they know it better. Like they know it better than I do, right? But start getting active in Discord conversations and Discord groups, build your Twitch channel, start promoting it. You should have a social media marketing intern anyways to help on a lot of your social stuff. So give them a new task, you know, have them start marketing your Twitch channel, promoting your Twitch channel. From a paid social aspect, one really interesting thing about Twitter is that you can really hyper target ads to specific people. So you could really truly create your own little campaign to promote your Twitch channel on Twitter, which is the top place where conversations around esports are happening outside mm-hmm. of Discord. And you can take a blend of esports and chess accounts for your own, right? People who are passionate about chess and chess gaming and find those groups, and you can push your ad just to the followers of those accounts. It saves you a ton of money. You're not casting out a wide net. You're being very intentional, right? Yeah. About who you're trying to reach. But then, you know, you also could think about schools that have really great chess programs, clubs, and you could approach them about, hey, this is what I'm building. This is my Twitch channel. Can we co-stream? Do you have any chess players that also play digitally? Can we do a little co-stream chess event? And now what you're doing is you're organically growing your followers, because that club is going to co-market and promote this event with their top chess player, yeah. right? It's just like thinking really broad out of the box. And then now you're going to capture that audience. And then you just continue to follow that cadence of these micro communities. It's all about authentic community. I mean, you could pay to get a ton of followers, but are they going to be engaging? Are they really going to be the connective tissue that's going to help you build? And then it's like, what else, right? Like, mm-hmm. is being a competitive esports chess content creator going to get enough eyeballs that are going to anchor back to monetization? Maybe not. And maybe you don't care if it anchors back to monetization, right? But you want to be thoughtful about that. Are there other strategy games that are very popular that, because you're so well-versed in a strategy game already, like chess, that you could kind of pivot towards and try out and to see how successful you could be in one of those other games? That might be something to consider. And then just casually play. One thing that athletes do that shoot themselves in the foot is they want to be so good at everything because they've been so good at the one thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, people don't need you to be the best right off the bat. You don't have to put that kind of pressure on yourself. Just go and have fun and really let your personality shine. And that's what people are really attracted to, especially on the streaming platforms. You know, the number one guy in streaming and on Twitch that everybody talks about is Ninja. But Ninja's not the best Fortnite player. It's not because, I mean, he's a good Fortnite player, but he's not the best, right? Booga's the best. Booga's the world champion. So what is it about Tyler Blevins, AKA Ninja, that people are so passionate about that make him the top billable guy on Twitch? It's his unique personality. It's his high-pitched little fun voice. It's his blue hair. It's the edgy boy next door, coupled with somebody that you could just listen to for a long time. That's the key on streaming. You don't have to be the best at the game. You just have to be a great entertainer. Insert Dennis Rodman, right? Like, yeah. Dennis Rodman's brand, he's a phenomenal basketball player, but what are we always going to remember Dennis Rodman for is his personality, right? You don't need to go that far in this world, but it's a really good illustration of how your personality is your personal brand and how it can translate then into this digital space.
No, I appreciate that. That's really insightful. So when it comes to marketing, I mean, that's your bread and butter. Can we talk about, like, what makes a good marketer from the athlete perspective? And, like, you know, you talked about 10 years ago from a social media perspective and now esports, but just generally, what are some trends that you're seeing now? And what are some things that can make us better marketers moving forward?
You know, for me, when I've worked with athletes, especially one-on-one, I think of myself more as a unofficial life coach than I do a marketer. I'm not traditionally trained. I've learned from being the boots on the ground and being a producer and a project manager, being an account manager, like just having different roles in agencies and marketing teams, brand manager with the Wolves. But really the difference has been the more of the life coach aspect. Being able to open up the eyes of the athletes that I've worked with over the years that really help them, not necessarily where they are in that moment, but prepare for that next moment. I once heard an athlete, a WNBA player, say that an athlete dies two deaths. The first death is when they're no longer playing in the league. And then the second is their true death. And honestly, for a lot of athletes, that first death is a lot harder to, you know, to deal with, because they have really been focused on one thing for so long and seen as this one thing. And when that's stripped away, I think the misconception is that athletes choose to retire, but in reality, you know, you and I both know that most are either injured out or just not re-signed. Yeah. And that's really hard because they didn't choose and they were not prepared for that exit. So how do you prepare for that exit? One is building your personal brand and figuring out how to build a personal brand that can eventually be tied to dollars. The second is hard to convince. It's the hardest thing to convince an active athlete, is for them to build their network while they're viable, because they've got this block in their mind where they think that they're always going to be top billing. They're always going to be a viable athlete. And the reality is it's going to be difficult for them to get anyone to pick up the phone when they're not playing ball anymore. It's just really difficult. And I've heard, I can't remember who told me, but they called it the owl syndrome, right? Who? Yeah. Who is this? Who? Nobody knows who you are anymore. You're not relevant. Yeah. So if you are viable, if you are relevant in the moment, you have to be building your network. How do you do that? Well, the team you play for does it for you. You're just not taking advantage of it. Who's sitting courtside? Who's sitting in those good football and soccer seats, right? Yeah. Who's sitting on the glass? Pay attention. Who are your premium sponsors? Who are those brand sponsors? You're forced to go to these boring events and shake hands and you don't want to be there. The entire time you're there, you're thinking, I don't want to be here. I could be with my girl. I could be with my boys. I could be doing X, Y, Z. I don't want to be here. This is lame. I want to get out of here. That's the narrative in your head. If you shift the narrative in your head, and your narrative in your head is, how does this guy afford to not only sit courtside for 8 years? Because trust me, 8 years, when you're done playing basketball, you're not going to afford those seats. You won't be able to afford those seats in 8 years after you're done playing basketball. Right? You won't. The majority of you won't be able to afford those seats 8 years after you're playing. So what did that guy do different? What did that guy or that girl do to get those seats? And on top of that, also give $500,000 to a sports team to have their company logo up on the wall, right?
Yeah.
Learn from them. Magic Johnson says that the biggest decision he ever made was to ask questions to some courtside seat holders about what they did. And then he asked to come in and have regular meetings with them. And then he learned how to invest. Major. He took advantage of connections when he was viable and he became an investor. And that's where now he's building revenue from. And you can be an investor with $1,000, right? Like, so you're viable. You've got cash flow. You have money. Start building those assets. And it comes to those events. Comes to those events that you get invited to. It comes to going to places like, you know, General Mills and getting your face on a Wheaties box and shaking people's hands. Grab those business cards. Make your own business cards. I've made business cards for pro athletes that just have their name, an email address that's completely separate from all their personal stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And they utilize that to stay connected to these business executives. Think about it in the long term, your future job opportunities, right? You know, what else are you passionate about? What else puts a fire in your belly? It might not be esports. It might not be traditional sports. You might love to hunt with your dad. Well, when Cabela's or Bass Pro Shops is at the table at a networking event and you've got their top guys, ask to do a tour of their front office, ask to do an externship. The NFL does these externships where they take their NFL athletes during the off season. And if you want to be a part of the program, they can embed you in companies that you care about, you know, and then all of a sudden you're learning hands-on what it is to work in that type of a organization, because you're going to need a job, you know, you're going to need a job. And there's too many car salesmen and real estate guys that are connected to, you know, the former athletes, like diversify that a bit, you know, think about yourself more than if you want to be a salesman, that's great, but you know, think bigger, think about what really makes you excited and start making those connections while you have the luxury to have conversations with people that know so much, you know, and drop the ego. I always felt like when I worked at the Timberwolves, on media day, I could tell the guys that weren't going to last very long because they started to notice patterns, because the ones with big egos, nobody wanted to deal with after 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, but the ones that were humble and wanted to learn, you know, like a Randy Foy is a great example of just like a guy who worked so hard and came in, and he was like an extension of the coaching staff, almost the way he worked with young players. And I mean, he was in the league for, I don't know, 11, 12 years. Working in the NBA, no, if you ask 100 people on the street who Randy Foy is, no one's going to tell you who he is, but he had like a dozen years in the NBA. That's a humble, hardworking athlete, right?
No,
that's someone who's comfortable doing the work to be the bench man, to come in a clutch when it's needed. And that's how all of us really should live our professional lives. And all of us can decide to do that. But that's important too. And then a trusted circle. Who's in your trusted circle? Even people like Kevin Garnett get taken advantage of in this space, right? Because he worked with a wealth advisor who was not a fiduciary. I mean, he got screwed. He got majorly taken advantage of. And that's Kevin Garnett. Like, who would mess with that guy? It just seems completely unheard of, right? So you have to protect your assets. You have to protect your physical assets with insurance. I've seen a lot of athletes over the years have things stolen from girls they brought home or buddies or complete strangers. And they did not have any insurance on those assets, on that jewelry. They didn't even have photos of some of it. And then, you know, protect your body. Your body is an asset, both in traditional sports and esports. In esports, we've got athletes getting injured out due to carpal tunnel injuries, shoulder, elbow, neck, because it's very redundant, just like the secretary syndrome that was going on in the 80s and 90s, where people weren't using ergonomic equipment and desks and chairs, and they were really putting a lot of damage on some of their joints. That's happening in the esports world. In traditional sports, you know, it's are you at risk of injuring your knees? Well, then maybe you should put an insurance policy on your knees, because if something were to happen to your knees, and then and your forecasted income because of your athleticism is this much, then you're going to get an insurance policy pay you out of a contract you're not going to get because you had a massive injury. And these are things that people don't talk about with athletes very often, but it's important to understand. You know, how are you going to invest? And how are you going to start investing right away? So for me, it's like being a life coach first. And when you can get an athlete that really understands that and lives in that mindset, marketing them is easy. It's easy. It's easy. You know, there's this really interesting, I think it used to be like one of those weird email chains people used to send to you and be like, if you forward this to 10 friends, then you'll have good luck for 4 days. And then it turned into like a meme or something, but it's like the story actually is really important. It makes me think about what I do when it comes to working, especially one-on-one with talent. Is a little boy is walking along a beach and there's all these sand dollars washed ashore, and he's grabbing them, and there's hundreds and thousands of them, right? He's picking them up and he's throwing back in the water, and a gentleman stops him and he's like, what are you doing? There's too many. You're not going to save them all. And he's like, I just saved this one, right? Like, if you can convince someone to take ownership of their life and their career when they have the ability to pivot mm-hmm. before it's never really too late, but there are definitely moments while they are playing. That's the best time to get them to open their eyes to the fact that they are the ones who are in control of their brand and their future life. If you can get them to buy into that and to invest in it, then you're going to be successful. Then they're a marketer's dream, because marketing an athlete, it's easy. I mean, everybody loves to be connected to an athlete. I sat first class on a plane with one of the executives from US Bank, huge bank, national bank. And I asked, would you take an in-person meeting with an active professional athlete? And he was like, absolutely. Yeah, I for sure. No brainer. I was like, what if it was somebody who hadn't played sports in 5 or 10 years? And he was like, my team, my staff probably wouldn't be very excited. Right. And then I was like, okay, so your staff excited, like, what does that have to do with bringing in the athlete? He's like, well, I would, if I brought an existing pro athlete into the office and I had a meeting with them, it would create an excitement and a buzz and an energy around the office that we don't get here very often. And if I would be able to walk him through our office and introduce that individual to people on our staff just randomly, our productivity would go up. People would be talking about it for weeks and months. They'd go home and they'd tell their families. But if it was some retired athlete who hadn't played in a while, it would be harder to create that same sense of energy.
That makes sense. And it goes back to your owl syndrome, you know, so how do you take advantage of your career now? You talked about one thing that I want to touch on, you know, as an athlete to invest and get into those investments. You know, you're a member of Stadia Ventures as an advisor and involved as a partner as well. You help athletes, you know, get into certain deals and understand deal flow and, you know, what to look out for. As athletes kind of get more inclined with their alternative investments, what are some things that come right on top of mind in terms of things that we should look out for, things that we should, you know, stay away from, things that we can trust, you know, all that?
Yeah. Stay away from investing in your friend's tomato farm, stay away from your buddy's car wash, stay away from anything that's, you know, even if it's not somebody, you know, do not do one-to-one investments. Don't put your money, don't bank your money on the shoulders of one other person. Put your money into a fund that diversifies investment, and then you really have to do calculated risk. So I would say that, you know, and I'm not a wealth advisor personally. Yeah. I'm not.
Disclaimer.
I'm not a wealth advisor. Work with a fiduciary. A fiduciary is somebody who's legally obligated to do what's in your best interest. Because when I worked at a wealth management firm in marketing, so I was not a wealth manager. I've never been a wealth manager. One of the things that we would see is people would come in and they would show us where their investments were currently. And say they're with some big bank, say that their investment advisor works at a big bank. I won't name any names, but this is a real case study. So somebody came in there, they are at a high net worth boutique, you know, wealth management firm, but it's owned by one of the largest banks in the United States. If you, you know, our team knows what the funds are. So we had somebody take all where all their investments were on a spreadsheet, right? That they gave us access to that. And you take a highlighter and you start highlighting where their investments were, you wouldn't believe the yellow lines of money that was being invested back into holdings that the bank owned. Doesn't say the bank's name on it, but there are, but if you connect the dots, if you do the research, they're owned by that bank. That bank is not a fiduciary. That bank is putting your money into funds that they're collecting interest on. They're using your money to grow their money. They're taking advantage of you. That is not in your best interest. That is in their best interest, right? So it might be the one of the biggest banks in the world, and you might be like starry-eyed, like, well, they must know what they're doing, but there's a reason why they got a lot of money, right? So find yourself a fiduciary that is legally obligated to only invest your money into things that are in your best interest. Now, that said, a lot of fiduciaries have a hard time taking bigger risk. So take a percentage of the largest percentage of your investment should be in safer investments, right? Slow growth. Athletes are young. You have time to build and compound interest. And as you get older and older and older, if you don't touch that money, that compound interest is going to blow your mind. It's literally going to blow your mind. But is there space to be passionate and be involved in the process and to play with a certain percentage of your investment? And I won't give you a number, but it should be a smaller number of your investment. Maybe start with a one or a two, smaller investment that you put into portfolios that you're passionate about. And if you are an athlete and you're passionate about sports and sports technology, there's programs, you know, in Canada, there's Brickhouse Ventures. You can go in and be a part of that entire process and lend your voice to the process. You can be a mentor and an advisor. And, you know, that gives you purpose as well. And that's exciting. And then, like you mentioned, Stadia Ventures. And there's people involved in Stadia Ventures that are extremely well respected throughout the esports and sports ecosystem. And it is a great place to make connections, to find your next move. And, you know, like, We had people come in that had a pro team owner invested independently in this company. And then the founders of the company came to Stadia and they weren't even looking for Stadia investment, but they because they were a part of the family of Stadia, because this pro sports owner is in Stadia, they had access to come to one of our pitch events at our pitch days. And they could hear how other startups are pitching. They could connect with other investors. They could connect with different, you know, people like myself and other people throughout the industry as a whole, and make these strategic connections and continue to grow and evolve, right? Mm-hmm. So being a part of something like that, while it is definitely important to have that networking connectivity, you don't want to put all your money into one thing. And what's great about being an investor through a program like Stadia or some of these larger holding groups. I know there was a great announcement about eFuse getting investment in the Columbus, Ohio area, and the fund that gave them money, there were maybe 7 or 8 pro athletes in that Cleveland, Columbus, Ohio area that are part of the fund. Yeah. So, I mean, you're investing in a fund that is testing the waters in a number of things versus being an individual and giving a large sum of money to one entity, which, I mean, you and I both have experience working with some of these startups that they don't make it. And I worked with quite a number of them that, because they were products or apps that were tightly connected to live events, they just couldn't. They couldn't handle COVID, right? Like, who can go a whole year and 2 months without a single transaction? So you have to minimize the amount of risk you have, but you still should take a little bit of risk. You know, I wanted to buy Bitcoin in 2014 and I was advised against it. And I just wanted to basically take, like, it was like a bonus amount of dollars. It wasn't factored into like my personal life. But I was like told, like, this is just play money. It's not real. It's like Monopoly money. Don't do it. Don't do it. And I was like, ooh, now I'm kind of scared. So I didn't. And you don't want to crunch the numbers. It's scary. What $20,000 of Bitcoin in 2014 would be worth right now is like just sad.
Oh yeah, how can I say it? I complain to my friends every day, the ones that were telling me, yeah, Bitcoin. I'm like, I can't understand it, so I'm not getting into it. And I'm telling them now, like, how come you guys didn't tell me about this Bitcoin stuff? So, right. But everything's in hindsight, and, you know, you're doing really well. For the people that want to connect with you, do you have any, like, takeaways or lasting things that you want to leave the audience with? I mean, really appreciate you giving us the rundown on esports, marketing, and, you know, when it comes to investing. I really appreciate it.
You know, I would say for anyone interested in learning more about Stadia Ventures, go to stadiaventures.com. I speak on Clubhouse quite a bit. I mean, my last name is spelled Longawa. If you just, you know, look that up, like the only Rebecca Longawa there is in the world. So probably find me. I have my LinkedIn is privatized. So if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, you have to know my email address. It's Rebecca@happywarrior.us. Just because I get such an influx of, you know, weird sales leads that clog up my email. So if anybody intentionally wants to reach out to me to talk about, anything you heard today or to network, I'm more than happy to connect with you there on LinkedIn. My podcast is on, the Future Eye Network. It's called The Future of Marketing and Esports. If you're interested in the esports ecosystem and how marketing is working within that space, I have the most amazing guests on my podcast. They do most of the talking, so you don't have to hear my voice. But that is a really great way to start learning about nuances within the industry. And there's just so many layers to this space. So that's the best way to reach me. It was really great to be on your podcast. Thanks, Moby, for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. I know your schedule is busy, so for us to make it work out means a lot. And definitely going to have all that information in the show notes. I might keep the email away, so you have to listen to the podcast to get her email and reach out to her via LinkedIn. But all her other information will be up there. She's on Clubhouse actively giving gems and always been helpful for me and countless other athletes. So it's always appreciated. Definitely appreciate you taking the time, and thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll talk soon.
Thank you for tuning into this podcast episode. For more information, check out the show notes and go to our website, www.afrugalathlete.com. If you enjoyed, please leave a favorable rating and review, and share and subscribe. Thank you so much.